Welcome to the Jones Zone, a podcast by Daryl and JJ Jones, your resource for building wealth and knowledge in everything real estate. Your host, Daryl Jones, a top Orange County real estate agent, has been supporting homeowners for over 30 years. He is here to share his tips and advice, as well as insights from industry experts, to help you take your real estate game to the next level. Now, here's your host, Daryl Jones.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to another episode of the Jones Zone. Today, I wanted to talk about homeowners associations. So I've got Nancy Foxhall, who actually is the head of the homeowners associations at the Glenbrook track in Brea, which is the track I actually grew up in. Kind enough to join us today. So we're going to just shoot out some questions. What's your title called?
I'm just the manager.
HOA manager. Yours is a little bit different because yours is a housing track. It's not like a condominium track where you have all the units covered, et cetera, but it's still worth diving into. So what's your primary role as the homeowners manager?
Initially, you know, it's social. It's budgeting. It's just handling all the common grounds for all the residents, because it is a little different. Like you said, it's single family homes. They maintain their own properties. Our on-site management is nice. We rent out the club so residents can use the club. And so all that has to be maintained. We have to figure out the budget and funding for everything, activities, safety, security, enforcing the laws here that we have our governing documents. It's just a little bit different, but it's still a management company. You still have to deal with everything that other management companies deal with. Residents not paying or violations, mediation. It's just keeping this area harmony, properties looking similar and clean, neat, the hot common grounds, clean and neat, and then making sure that we're keeping it financially stable, enforcing all the rules.
You know, one of the great parts, growing up in Glenbrook, I had no idea. I thought all the clubs were the same. In fact, I've been selling real estate for 35 plus years, and I've never found another HOA that actually has lifeguards on duty. Now, do you guys still start the first day of spring? Because I remember when I was a kid, the pool opened the first day of spring. The reason I remember that is because that was my birthday. And so the pool opened the first day of spring. But I'm guessing it's probably not quite a long season anymore. What's your season there for the pool?
Well, you know, we really kind of go by the weather because, you know, it's California. I'm from Massachusetts, so you don't heat a pool. You jump in cold water, but out here, people don't like to jump in cold water. So we usually start in March doing weekends only. Okay. My staff is, you know, the kids, the lifeguards are at school. Once we get into May, and then it's straight out swim lessons, swim team. And the pool's open every single day. The club doesn't close except for Thanksgiving, Christmas, and New Year's. Those are the only days that we're not accessible to the residents.
And you not only have a pool, though, you've got a really cool clubhouse. I've gone to a couple functions. In fact, my 50th birthday party was a surprise party thrown in one of your banquet rooms or the banquet room. I don't know if you have multiple banquet rooms, if you call it a banquet room or whatever you call it.
Yeah.
Tell us more about what you guys have, because it's a really dynamic place.
It's fantastic. It is really one of a kind, and it's an awesome community. We have a giant game room, which used to be the original sales room. So when people were buying originally in Glenbrook, would go into the sales room, which is our game room, look at the homes, see everything that was there. And then take a tour. So then there's the main lounge, fireplace. We have pinochle and bridge and everything else in that room. And then there's a full kitchen. There's a back room, which we call our multi-purpose room. And that's just a big open room. And it goes out to the back patio. So a lot of residents, when they rent, they'll have a party inside, outside, or our front patio. We have a huge barbecue area in the front that leads down to the pool. And then we used to have Tiny Tots. Ages and ages ago, we had somebody that actually taught Tiny Tots classes there. I have an original balance beam still. I kept it. There used to be gymnastics here.
I took the gymnastics class when I was a kid there. So I remember that.
Balance beam is still here. I don't have the heart to get rid of it. And it's a really good quality beam. So I don't know if there's anybody out there for starting a gymnastics program that needs a beam. I would donate it, but it's fabulous. So when residents rent the clubhouse or when we have events here, they can use the whole place.
Can anybody rent the clubhouse? You had to be a resident.
Have to be a resident, yes.
Okay. Or no residents, I guess. But either way, anyway, you have to be a resident. Let's keep the rules clean here. And then you also have a basketball court.
Yes, we have a basketball court. And I painted a pickleball court on top of that. So they play pickleball there too. The residents play pickleball. Yeah.
Oh.
We have a small community garden. We have grapefruits and all that stuff. So they pick back there. Yeah.
So tell me, let's go back to the rule enforcement. What are your mechanisms in place? Let's start with somebody who doesn't pay the dues. Well, how's that work?
That's always tricky. I know a lot of people in here, so I will try my best to avoid any kind of major stuff for them, collections, hearings, whatever. So first I will just send their statement with a letter stating, okay, you're behind, you're delinquent, you need to, you know, pay up by this date. If you don't pay by this date, then you're going to have to come to the board and kind of explain it. Some people do have issues where they're struggling. They really are. They live here, but they're still struggling. Actually, older folks are really finding it difficult now because they have fixed income and things keep going up. I'll write the notice first and invite them to talk to me, figure out something beforehand. If I get no response, they'll get another statement with a letter saying, okay, you need to show up for a hearing. If they don't show up for the hearing, don't make any payment, don't contact me, then they'll get a letter stating that our lawyer will be contacted and then we'll initiate collections, which will involve trying to get the money, you know, first before you put a lien on the house. But that's unfortunately the process you have to go through. But it does take a while because you have to give them a certain amount of days to receive the letter and respond, a certain amount of days to receive the letter and respond to the meeting. Usually it's effective. Or if I don't hear from them, I will knock on their door, bring the letter personally, and just say, you know, what's going on? And I have found situations where they're just in dire straits in there, or they're sick, or family member has passed away and they're trying to deal with stuff. So, and then we try to work with them. Our board is very compassionate. We'll work with them and do the best that they can to help them through that. They still have to be responsible for their dues though. They still have to pay,
but there's a mechanism though. I mean, let's take worst case scenario, because I think I saw this in another track where the HOA actually technically can, after a long period of time, foreclose on a house.
Yep, you can. You know, we have properties that'll get liens on them. And the thing is, when they try to sell their house, you know,
They got to pay them off. Yeah, so you're secure. Yeah, you know, it's funny. I think, if I remember correctly, it was either $9 or $12 when I remember because I had to ride my bike down to the, I lived on Val Verde. I'd ride the bike straight down the cul-de-sac and pay it for my folks. I for sure remember $12. What are they now? 62? 70. Oh, 70. It's still so very
over low. 60 years, we've only gotten to $70. But yeah, we do have 199 homes that are, you know, contributing to that. So it's nice that there's a large number. But I do know plenty of HOAs that have less houses and giant, you know.
Oh, huge. Yeah. No, Somerset's big one. Oh, a lot of them are big. That park that's right outside the pool, people are thinking, we don't even know where this place is. This place is just on the in between Birch, off of Birch and Associated, off Imperial, the 57 freeway, just in case anybody wants to know. It's a great place to grow up. In fact, we almost moved back there when a property came back on the market a few years ago, because when I grew up there, there were so many kids. There were kids in almost every single household. So, and I tell people who are buying there now, if you don't have kids right on your street, don't worry about it. You can always go down to the clubhouse. There's always plenty of friends and kids that you can get to meet there. It's just it's just an awesome place to grow up. Okay, so you got the clubhouse, and then that park across the street though, or across the parking lot, that's a city park.
Correct. But it is still a great park it's adjoining us here. So people can park here, or their residents, a lot of them walk through there with their dogs and their kids because there's a playground down there. So
it's kind of nice because you guys don't have to take care of it.
Right. Correct.
I mean,
even better.
Yeah. And then you don't have any greenbelt there, is it? I remember.
No, they're all individual homes, so they're responsible for theirs. But we take care of everything here. I have eight trees on this property. So it's when it's trim time, it's a big deal.
What are some of the common misconceptions homeowners have about HOAs?
Well, I think, first of all, we find that they think that they have unlimited power. But still, a board of directors still has to deal within
they being the HOA has unlimited powers, right?
They can set whatever price they want for fees, that they can do whatever thing. But CC&Rs are set up, those governing documents are set up so that there are limitations. You know, everything has to be within those rules. So there'll be a section in your CC&Rs that'll say that they can only raise the dues so much.
CC&Rs mean covenants, conditions, restrictions, just in case people don't know. And then there's rules and regulations.
Bylaws. There are very specific things that tell you when meetings have to be held, like our annual meeting, for all the homeowners to vote and come to visit and see what's happening. So those rules, there are rules that everything we have to follow as well. It's not just a, well, let's just charge this much. And then you have to justify all those charges, you know, the fees, how you're coming up with that. So you budget, so you have your activities, events, safety, security, everything that's management, everything that's here, that's controlled in the common grounds, and operating your reserves, all those things have to be within those fees. So we can't just charge whatever we want.
You know? There's a limit in the CCNRs. It's funny, I'm selling a house, another house, in, oddly enough, in Brea. And that's the one of the big questions. How high has it come up? How high can it go up? And I always tell them, I say, well, you got to look at the CCNRs and the rules and everything. Typically, there's a percentage, meaning it can only go up 5% in 1 year at the most or something like that. Is that fair to say?
Yeah. All different CCNRs, you know, all different homeowners associations have their different settings of what those minimum percentages are. So we have to follow that. That's very, very important. They're not all the same. Like, we are individual homes. Each one is an individually owned home. There are townhouses, there are condos, those have HOAs too, but those, they take care of the roofs. So their fees are usually higher because they're maintaining the green belts, they're taking care of the roofs, the exterior of those properties. Here, those people are responsible for that. So it does change from place to place. And it's important that people come to the meetings and hear what's happening too, because you do have to have monthly meetings. Again, those things are all stated in the rules. So that people know it's a transparent environment, so people can come in and say, okay, what's happening here, here, and here? Are there any lawsuits in place? Is there anything going on? So we can't just do what we want. We still have to follow the rules as well, which is really important. And most places aren't just looking for cash. It's not supposed to be a profit maker. It's supposed to just be able to sustain itself.
Now, I talked a little bit about delinquent dues. What about other violations? Do you have kind of the same protocol in handling that? And maybe you can name a potential violation. I know Glenbrook's pretty cool. I mean that in a really good way. Whereas, for example, some HOAs will have even colors that you can't paint your house. Or you can't paint your house. You mentioned, I think, trees. What other things are there?
Most common violations that I have to deal with is people don't take down their Christmas decorations. In our rules, it says January 15th, they have to come down. So then architectural control will drive through the neighborhood monthly to see what's happening. Are the yards being maintained? Are there weeds? Is there any kind of obstructions on the sidewalks? Are there windows broken? Or, you know, you want to maintain an appearance, a curb appeal for every home. And some people can't. I remember one house, they wouldn't cut their yard. And it was a very weird situation. It was a son, the parents had passed away, and he was struggling. So I decided I would go over. I had told him, I'll come and help you. So I decided to go over, but he didn't answer the door. So I just started going at it myself because we had talked about it. But he called the police, and the police came over and said, you have to get off his property. I was like, all right, well, okay, let's go.
No good deed goes unpunished.
I tell you, but no, it's usually... The biggest issue is yards and weeds. And there are some other things, like you cannot, I mean, it's city code. You can't leave a motorhome on the street for more than 3 days. And sometimes people park them, they're cleaning them, they're getting them ready, and then they leave it the whole week because they're going to take off again. Well, you're not supposed to do that. You can't park large with our CCNRs, the way we have it set up. You can't leave trailers in the driveway or big, long motorhomes that obstruct the sidewalk, trucks, things like that. So, but usually it's yard. That's my biggest thing.
I often will tell people, look, as much as it limits you, it protects you. Because the fact of the matter is, I've had sold houses to where I've actually, it's similar to you, what you've done, where I had, there was a house across the street with weeds that were up to the waist. And I just had a guy go over there and mow those things, mow it down. Because I literally have had people not buy a house because the neighbor had just, or they didn't take care of their yard. So it's a good thing. I mean, in a sense.
We're not so restricted that you can't do things. I know it, there's one homeowners association here, you can't even plant the flowers you want. So
yeah.
We are very happy.
Very libertarian.
Yeah. You know, and it's just, You can't have, like you said, 3-foot weeds growing there, and it brings bugs, and it just doesn't look good. So That's our biggest problem is that.
So how are the HOA fees determined and what do they typically cover?
You have to have cost considerations. So, you know, it's got to cover operations, everything, the reserves, which, you know, you have to keep a certain amount of reserve money there so that in case something happened to the building or something had to be replaced, you could fund that.
What is that amount? I mean, is it a percentage? How did they figure that out?
We determine because you have to have a reserve study done.
Okay.
So there's companies that'll do that. They'll come in, they'll look at the life of every single thing you have, your computers, your furniture, your roof, your windows, outside area. So they'll come and they'll assess the whole place. And then they will then give you, okay, the life expectancy on this is, you know, 40 years and you've had it for 50. So now it's in that money to replace. You know, they figure out how much it's going to cost to replace everything. So then what we do is then they give you an option. They'll say, okay, because they have to see all of our finances and they'll say, all right, with the amount of dues that you're collecting, this number has to go into the reserves to make sure that it's staying fully funded or close to fully funded. Each year we get that assessment and then we say, okay, the dues are, we can still operate that way and cover the reserves. I forget right now, it's something like at one point it was like $5.61 or something per dues that gets designated for reserves. So that way we're maintaining the common grounds. We're making sure everything is good for everyone. You also can't let things fall apart. Somebody falls because of your negligence as a clubhouse and they can sue you. And then forget that. That just does such damage to the community. So, you know, you have to do that. And then some places have flat fees. We have a flat fee per month, but some places, I did read that some places actually go by the size of your property. So maybe you have just like an apartment, I guess. So if you have a one bedroom, they're going to charge this much. If you have two bedrooms, you're going to charge this much. So
interesting.
Yeah. But it's a little different because these are all single family homes. So it's just property. And then we also have the voting. So those are determined also at the annual meeting. And that's when the residents can come and talk. And, you know, that it has to be announced that you're going to have an increase. They can come and discuss that and say, well, why do you have to do this? What is going on? And what's changed that you have to increase that? So usually it's just basically costs of running the place, electricity, water, all those things just go up. We don't take care of their trash. They all individually take care of that through their taxes. We cover the common areas. That's how those fees are determined for us. Common areas. It could be greenbelt. So maybe landscaping's gotten ridiculous. And so they would have to pay more for that. But we do common grounds, utilities, all that stuff is taken care of here. So
it's all just a math. It's basically a math equation.
Right. Right.
Now, what's the board consist of? The board consists of homeowners. How does that work?
Yes.
And how many?
They're volunteer. We have 10.
Oh.
10? Yeah.
10? Who's the deciding vote?
I take that back. Is it 11? Wait. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. No, 9.
Okay, 9.
Well, 10 is the account, you know, our accountant that sits there and then me. So, because we go to the meetings too, I was thinking, okay, how many packets do I make? But yeah, so we have 9.
And how that they're voted in? How's that work?
Yes. That goes in our annual packet every year. So,
and how long is the duration of their term?
Oh, some people have been doing that for a long time. They just, it's every year, 3 years. They have a 3.
Okay.
And then every year, but you know, we constantly are voting every year.
And there's a president, or are they just all equal?
Yeah, we have a president, vice president, secretary, treasurer. We have a community relations. We have a management liaison. So I have someone from there is checking me to make sure I'm doing my job. We have grounds, building and grounds, and we have architectural control.
All their positions are equivalent as far as a vote goes.
Yes.
That makes sense. Okay. Now, what about if two neighbors have disputes? How do you guys handle that? How's the HOA get involved in that?
Well, the very first thing, because somebody will email me or text me or call me and say, something like, well, you know, their trees are, they're causing my fence to fall and the wall to fall. So I always tell them first, you need to talk to that person directly. Because sometimes it's stuff in the backyard. I mean, if it was stuff in the front yard, we could work a little bit more, but things in their backyards, is that's their business. So I will tell them always to talk to that person first. And I can't believe how many people are afraid to talk to their neighbors. They like to say hi, but they're not extremely thrilled with going over and saying, hey, you know, So yeah. I always tell them they do have to talk to their neighbors first. It does have to try to be resolved between the two of them. It is their problem. But sometimes they'll say, it's just not happening. And so I'll send you have to look at the situation first, because sometimes people see things differently. So, you kind of go over and look. Or I'll tell them sometimes there's things going on in their backyards, trash and rats or whatever. And I'll say, just, call the city, have them come and look at this situation, and they can cite them for endangerment or something. They can see what the situation is. But for the most part, we will try to handle it, have them handle it. And if that can't work, I will send a letter to the party that may be causing the problem. Maybe they're having parties every weekend. Maybe they're parking their car constantly in a way that other neighbors can't put their trash out, stuff like that. I get those kind of calls. So I'll go and see and say, oh yeah, they keep parking their car right in front when they could park in front of their house and they can't get their trash cans out. So I'll write a letter just saying, can you, just in general, just a communication to kind of open up the door to say, listen, can you just park forward so that they can put their trash cans out, or we need you to stay within, finish your parties at 10 and be quiet.
And then they go till 10 a.m. and they say, oh, we didn't know you meant p.m. Oh, yeah. Now, but let's take the worst case scenario. Let's go ahead and play this all the way out. Let's say they're clearly violating an HOA rule and they're not fixing it. So is it similar to the mechanisms you have in place for,
yes,
for so HOA dues?
They're going to get a letter. They're going to have to come to a hearing and discuss that. And if that doesn't work, if you don't see any response, then we'll set up a mediation meeting where, maybe three board members will sit with both parties and listen to both parties. We wouldn't want to get into a legal action, but sometimes you have to, you really don't want to, but you really
hope that mechanism's in place. And what you just stated, for example, the three-member board, all that's in the CC&Rs that they're going to be reading prior to buying the home. So it's not like it's just sprung on them.
You would think they would read them. I get
that.
Yeah,
well, that's true.
my packet's huge that I send over, and they'll still call me and say, well, can we get a copy? I was like, yeah, sure. But you do have another copy somewhere buried in a box with all those escrow papers you signed. So, yeah.
How is the California legislation like Prop 19 and SB 9 effective HOAs? I guess Prop 19 hasn't really affected it. It just allows you to transfer your tax. But have you had anybody do that?
Yeah, I actually had a friend of mine that lived in Glenbrook, and she turned 55 and was moving to Long Beach. So had the opportunity to take her tax assessment, her property tax assessment, to Long Beach, which was great. Moving in there would have been a big...
Did she have to sell the house, though?
She sold our house here.
Okay, yeah. She had to sell the house.
So it does work in a positive way for seniors or people over 55 that want to move to another area to be able to, if they've been in a home for a really long time and they have a low property tax, to be able to take that with them. The SB9, that one scares me.
Oh, tell us more.
I mean, it just does, because even in our CC&Rs, it says that they can have an ADU. So I think now the rules are saying, well, you can build that and you can sell that. It just is a confusing process to me. If you own a property and you're paying property tax on that, and then you build a little house in the back, and then somebody lives there. I don't know all the legal parts of it, like how that ends up getting split, or do you still have to charge a property tax? You get charged a property tax. And what if somebody moves in and they're horrible? How do you get rid of them? You can't. They own that property.
That's a whole different show, I guess.
That's a whole big thing. But I mean, you can, you can put those, small homes in, as long as they fit in the area that you're going to be putting it.
Yeah, I have to have access. There's really a lot of things that have to qualify for just the logistics for it to make sense.
I mean, I don't know what they were thinking.
Well, welcome.
Come in. So I don't know. Yeah, I mean, it just increases in density. Like, so now you've got extra cars there. You've got extra people. It just, it just becomes a whole different dynamic in the neighborhood if you start including a lot of those places.
In your experience, do HOAs generally help or hurt property values? You tell me what your, I guess that's almost a question for me rather than you, but
yeah.
I'll let you answer.
Well, I think we both feel the same way, that if an HOA is working with the people and keeping it within reason and making sure that properties have nice curb appeal, you know, like you were saying about the weeds and stuff, we're just keeping it at a, so when people drive through, it doesn't look like a rundown old community. I mean, we're 60 plus years old and it still looks nice in here. People have done great modifications to their home.
Yeah.
But I feel like, I think for me, I feel like most of them are considering the whole community, not just the HOA itself.
Different strokes for different folks. I've got people that don't want them and then people that love them because they want to be protected. So
right. Ah. There's so much that's offered, I think, and they're not restrictive and things like that. I think you can be in a great community, pay a price and make sure your properties all look nice around you. The common grounds look great. They're maintained. Yeah. I think
that's
so.
Probably, and I have, Mike, I was going to ask you if you've had any success stories that HOA significantly improved the neighborhood. Do you have any?
Oh, this clubhouse sells this place big time. Yeah.
Oh, I'm not surprised about that.
And we've modified it. It's fantastic now. The whole front looks like a grand entrance. There's a lot of work. The board has been consistent in making sure that we have something when they come by, because the realtors will bring people in and we'll say, oh yeah, this is yours as well. So it's a great selling point, and it does really, I think it brings a lot of value to the properties that are here, that there's a community common area. You know?
I agree, especially your great ones. I know we used to have a little patch that we used to bring. You don't anything like that. Do you have that?
Not anymore, but the people have sent me pictures. It's fun.
Okay. And you still have a swim team.
Yes.
Tell us about that. Who do they compete against?
Just other swim teams with it. Like there's Placentia, there's Fast, there's all these different ones that actually competitive swim teams. And so, but they have to share locations for meets. And so we usually get two or three a year, big meet. It's fantastic to watch them. We have like 100 kids on our swim team.
How many, what levels? So what do you have? Like, are they grade levels? Is that how that works?
No, they're by swim ability. So they're bronze, gold, silvers, you know, and then they practice all summer. They'll start practice probably in April. And we also have a master's program where we have adult swim program. So it's,
I was just going to ask, I forgot to ask you that earlier. You still have adult swim?
Yeah. Well, not adult swim. The master's program is an actual coached competitive team. If they want to be, they do ocean swims and stuff, but I haven't done adult swim because
I used to hate that as a kid.
Every kid hates that. I don't know. I say to the guards, okay, wait, we do have a lot of kids. Are they being obnoxious? We could pull swim team. I mean, we could pull adult swim, but for the most part, I don't know. Things have changed. The parents are in the pool with the kids. So I do keep a lane line open. The kids can't go in there, so that somebody wants to come in and do laps during open swim, they can do that.
And it's a big pool, everybody. This is not a tiny little pool. This is a good sized pool. I remember we had a slide there and we had a high dive and a low dive. You still have a diving board. I think you were talking a little bit about that.
We have the 1 meter. The slide is gone. I have pictures of that though. The giants come down. It was crazy. I mean, they would just never let you have anything like that now. It was like a death trap. So you had you're on cement, climbing up this ladder all the way up and then get whoo, and it only went down into the 4 foot area. and then we have the diving board, which is a giant diving board. It's fantastic. Everybody loves it. So that's fun. I was thinking of putting a rock climbing like wall where they could climb and then fall in the water, but I don't know. That's probably
You are the right person for that job. I like your thinking. We'll end it with this. This has been just a wealth of information. Thank you too. So do you have any advice for people who are considering buying something with an HOA? What advice do you have to give them?
First, they have to do their due diligence. They really need to go in. They could even go to attend a meeting to places that they're considering. I think it's really important that they look at the dues. They look at the budget. They look at the community, how it's maintained. They look at the common areas and see what's happening there. Find out what kind of things that the community offers too. I think it's just really important that they take the time. It's not just buying a house, you're buying into a community, you know? And I think it's so important that you look and see what your community has to offer you and if you're protected and if everything's fair and it looks the way you want and if you can modify your home and if you can do those things and there's not so much restriction and it fits within your budget, you really have to figure dues aren't going to stay the same. They're going to increase as well. Does it fit in?
Speaking of that, because I get that question a lot, they're oftentimes concerned about dues going up. Do you have a record? This came just top of my head. Do you have a record, for example, the last 10 years? You can say, look, in 2015, the dues were X, and then they went up in 2017, and they get up again in 2020 or whatever. Do you have like a record where you can show the history of increasing the dues to show a potential buyer? Is that something impossible?
I could produce something like that, yeah, for somebody if they wanted to see that. We really try to keep it 5 to 6 years to not go up again. So we've been trying. You know, you can go up every year that little teeny percentage, you know, or you the way it's written, you can also delay that and then go up a certain amount. So we would rather kind of, instead of saying, okay, this year you're going to go up, you know, $2.33, you know, it's crazy. We try to keep it a even number and just be able to have those increases not impact them so much, you know?
Yeah. And that, well, I can attest to it. Like I said, I think it was $9 when it first started out. I know it was 12 at least, but that's a dollar a year for 60 years. That's not too shabby for years. I mean, for years.
It's been really very, very reasonable. And the board has always been considered that, well, they're residents too. So, you know, it affects them every time we do something as well. So that's why it's important to have, you know, that kind of backing behind you with a board and making sure that they're doing everything right too. So
yeah, makes sense. So is there anything that I asked that you wanted to let people know about HOAs, or we pretty much covered it?
I think we pretty much covered it. I think an HOA is a great thing. Not everybody probably can say that. I'm sure people have had some bad situations, but for us and for here, it's a great thing. So.
Well, I can attest to that. So Nancy, thank you so much for doing this for me. Seriously, this is going to be great. And I really, really appreciate it. Thanks for watching or listening to the Jones Zone. Stay tuned for future episodes. All right. Take care.
Thank you.
Thanks for tuning into the Jones Zone, your resource for building wealth and knowledge in everything real estate. If you found this information and insights shared in today's episode valuable, be sure to head over to iTunes to rate the show, leave a review, and subscribe so that you don't miss another episode. Remember, when it comes to real estate, knowledge is power. Stay informed and stay ahead of the game with us. I'll be back next week with even more expert advice and industry insights. Don't miss it. Thank you.